Blog Talk Radio.
What if you knew that you always have guidance? If only you could tune in to spirit and hear the messages of ancestors, angels, and teachers. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me series, and the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars and the 30 Love Lessons for the Soul. If you know anyone at the moment struggling with an addiction, emotional problem, or something they have to recover from, please check out the Healing Recovery Retreat, which is live in this week and the following week. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can, and often does, get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Lynn Cockrum Murphy has a doctorate in educational leadership. She teaches for Northern Arizona University, is a retired special education teacher, a licensed substance abuse counselor, an advanced level certified theta healer and instructor, and a certified Access Bars practitioner and instructor. In addition to healing herself, she facilitates physical healing, emotional growth, and removes blocks to a life of joy, meaning, and purpose. Her new best-selling book, Unfolding the Mystery of Self, We Are Never Alone, is an Amazon bestseller and goes well beyond the story of tragedy and trauma and describes the development of her psychic and healing gifts. So I'm delighted to welcome you back to my show, Lynn Cockrum Murphy. Just welcome.
Hi, Dr. Goodstone. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to talking today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it also. And I thought that it would be good just to refresh the listeners about your first book. Like you talk about a series of heart-wrenching traumas in your childhood, and you could have been depressed and enraged or suicidal. You could have dropped out of society. Many people do. You could have turned to drugs. But you found another path, a spiritual path, and you ended up writing that first book about living hope. So I'd love you to just share, you know, that background, and then what led you to create your current book, where you started to realize we always have assistance in life, we're not alone.
That first book really needed to be told. It was a story that was just kind of pounding inside of me, wanting to get out. So that was a very powerful experience. It took me years to get it out. And then I worked with a writing coach, and boy, that sure saved my neck. There's a great deal of focus in it on my early years, the loss of my father and sisters in a house fire, my own burns and dealing with survival, burns and loss. Then my mother used alcohol. I had quite a few family members who used alcohol to excess. And, you know, in some ways that watching what happened with them was probably beneficial because I decided I can't go there. I don't, you know, yeah, I'm unhappy, but I don't want to resolve it that way because they don't look any happier. They look kind of a mess. So let's not do that. My family had taken me to a lot of different churches through different family members. I'd gone to the Nazarene Church, the Catholic Church, the Presbyterians, Methodist, and so on. So I got a foundation of there is something that can help you. There is something greater than yourself. And I decided as I got older, like 16, 17, to look into that because if religion wasn't helping my family, but there was something greater than myself, how might that help me? You know,
I'd like to just say something in here.
Sure.
That was how Alcoholics Anonymous started. You know, the founder of that organization realized that there was something, a higher power. And
yes,
they currently have a whole retreat online about substance abuse and recovery. You know, and we do need more of that spiritual perspective. Many people have lost
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, in AA they do say that that's part of the deterioration that happens with the use of alcohol is you lose your spiritual connection, and getting it back is what will save your neck. So fortunately,
mm-hmm.
my family managed to show me that, and I grabbed onto it. I also started studying psychology, and that helped a lot because then there were other tragedies. When I was 9, my stepdad died in an accident that, as I learned more about my family, I thought probably wasn't an accident. And there was abuse and neglect. And my mother married another man who had a very serious alcohol problem. And eventually they bought a bar, and it was robbed. My mother was shot and killed, and that was 1980. And fortunately, that was the last of the really big, heavy stuff in my life. And I had already started the healing process. I was practicing Buddhist around that time. And then I moved into more of a Christian New Age base where I studied that way and managed to lift out of it because I was depressed for a while, you know, with that kind of an upbringing. It was like, and, you
I
know,
think,
back in the 50s and
60s. I think you would be abnormal if you didn't get depressed by severe situations.
Right. Yeah. And no one took their kids to counseling back then. I think finally in
right.
ninth grade, I asked the family, like, would that be an option? So those were some painful years. I'm really glad all that's passed. And life from like 25 on has been amazing. So I met my husband and got married at 28. And we've been
mm-hmm.
married, this summer will be, I think, 33 years, maybe 32. Anyway, I better look that up before the time comes. So, yeah, just to be safe. So the first book really talks about the pain, the suffering, and path, that spiritual path made a difference, clear to the extent where I began to see how much of life is an illusion, how much of the suffering that we experience is self-inflicted by our thoughts. So I studied healing methods also, and at first it started within the Buddhist sect. I had some powerful experiences with saving my cat and then working more with humans and studying more and watching my life change and so much goodness in my life, seeing myself
grow. Well, I just
grow.
Have to ask you, how did you mm-hmm. save your cat?
Oh, the Buddhist sect I was studying with at that time, we chanted. That was part of the daily practice, chanting morning and evening.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me that if you chant for things that you want, you can impact change in the world. So when my cat got so sick and was with the vet and it didn't look good, this cat, I'm trying to think how old he was then, maybe 10, took him to the vet and went home and started chanting and praying for the cat's well-being. And the vet called me back in like 2 days and said, you know, you can take him home tomorrow. He's fine. Never seen a cat get well from that problem that fast. And so it was a confirmation for me, like, you're on the right track. Keep going. You can impact change in the world if you do it through spiritual means. So, it was a wonderful start to that whole process. So in Unfolding the Mystery of Self, I talk about angelic experiences. The one that I had when I was in the hospital as a child was visited by two blue-colored angels, and I explain about that. Relatives that have come and talked to me, my grandmother. How old?
How old were you when this happened?
Two and a half.
Really?
But as I did the healing work on that time period, that was one of the things that came out was, I remember these two rather short blue-colored beings standing next to my crib saying wonderful, comforting things. And it was amazing. I remembered a lot of things from that time period. Nuns that were very angelic. Yeah, very blessed time period. So I talk about relatives and other people that have shown up, but also just how you can be sitting in meditation and, sometimes I will see the wings of angels and I will ask, who is that? And I tell one of the stories about that. An angel, an archangel I'd never heard of, showed up, and it was directly related to what I was praying for that day, what that archangel's specialty or gift is. So, again, confirmation. Unfolding the Mystery of Self also really talks about how today we get to have spiritual path and spiritual direction without religion. So some people choose church, and some people love the traditions and the ceremonies in church, and that comforts them. But a lot of us choose to do it on our own, find our own way. And I will visit a church on occasion if I want to, I get an inspiration that you should go check out that neighborhood church. So that works for me, but I'm never, so far, I've never been inclined to go back. I think there was a metaphysical church I went to for maybe 2 years. But generally, it's my own unique thing. And I think that's important to talk about that because I'm not the only one. And I think it's pretty hard to do this.
That a lot of church ceremonies are just, they're rote. There's a rote feeling, and someone studied it, and it doesn't have the heart or that deep sensation that touches you. I've seen that, and I have seen when it does touch you that deeply, you know the difference. You really feel it.
You really feel it. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the rote prayers that I learned as a child don't do anything for me, but to talk with God specifically about someone or something, I feel I'm being heard. Yes. So I think
another question while you're on there. Do you need a guru to do this? Do you need to have a teacher, or do you do it on your own? And for most people, what do you recommend?
The old teaching was that everybody had to have a guru, and that even if your guru died, you stayed connected to that one for all of your life, probably multiple lives. I don't see that as so anymore, or maybe that's just for people who follow a very specific religion. There are two paths to enlightenment, and one is in the monastery or as the monk, fully engrossed in your work and not engaged in the world. But the other path is engaged in the world. It is the human who is working and has a family and maybe even lives in a city, there's that path. And I think for those of us on that path, there are many teachers. So I've had teachers that stayed with me as long as, or I stayed with as long as 10 years, and others that were shorter. There's so much to glean from different people. And then we can, most of us don't go in like a straight line in our growth, you know, like there's a left turn and a right turn,
yes,
and an exploration here and exploration there. That's how I like to do it, and I know quite a few people that do. I do have friends that, you know, that are Jewish or Catholic, and they just follow their religion. But I have other friends that explore. It's very rich. I like it this way.
Yeah, and then you talk about angels. Do they actually take on a human form? I mean, the angels
that you saw
didn't look like humans.
Those two did not. The ones that I've seen in my meditations, I don't think that they do. But I have met humans that have very angelic energy. And I've been told that I do too. And I think that, you know that movie, oh my gosh, City of Angels?
Yeah.
That was the first time that concept was presented to me, that angels can transform into humans if they choose to. I think that that is real. I think that there are some angels who've never taken physical form, and then there are others that have. I think that my father was one of those beings. And people might think that I'm biased because my father saved my life. He's the reason I got out of the house that was burning down.
Mm-hmm.
But he had that same kind of energy. And I've met other people, too, that if you kind of tap into soul energy of people, I think is where you see that. Although I had a person in my class the other day that I thought certainly had fairy energy. She was so not fairy, elfin, very much like an elf. She was so cute, very precious.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, but then I don't believe that we as human beings are just human. I see us as light, that we are consciousness. We look like light. And that if we're not wearing our bodies, we're a beautiful orb of light. And that is our consciousness, and it has the freedom to live anywhere or to not be in a body. I think that our bodies and the solidity of this world creates an illusion that we're less than we are. I think that we're much greater than we think, and I talk about that in the book also. So the book really is supportive of people who are walking their own path and would like encouragement, especially as an American. Because so many of the people I studied were Hindu or, you know, from India, you know, people like Yogananda or Deepak Chopra or on and on. You know, there aren't as many American models. So hopefully my book will be helpful to people that way.
Right. So how does someone follow the spiritual path and overcome obstacles, you know, by knowing that they're more than just this physical body?
So many ways. One is to watch yourself talk. When you put yourself down, ask yourself, what's right about me that I'm not getting? To counter negative self-talk, to sit in front of a mirror, look over your shoulders and ask to see your guides, to meditate, create a spiritual practice, whatever type you want. For some people, it works better to have an active practice, you know, being in nature. Gardening can do it for some people. My first book has a chart on being versus doing and how the states of being, there aren't a whole lot of them. There are a million states of doing. But if you look at that in-between place where doing and being come together, that's where is Tai Chi, yoga, Qigong, gardening, walking in nature. So it's very possible to change everything in your life for the better. It does require perseverance. It might require asking for help. It might require taking a class, but it doesn't mean that you have to stay with any one thing. Only as long as it's serving you, as it's feeding your soul. And then move on to what's next.
So how do we gather resources, you know, to help us in this path?
Well, isn't the internet a fabulous resource that's mostly free? It's so incredible to me that, you know, a student can ask me a question. I can go to the internet and send them two or three articles on it. Someone was asking me the other day about raising vibrations. That was so easy to give her lots of information. So that's one way. Resources within that I can sit in silence and go within and find my own inner strength. I can talk to God. I can talk to angels and know that that's not a mental health issue, that I can talk to them. I can hear them. And they can talk back to me. It's okay. So I think immersing yourself in trying a meditation class, trying a Tai Chi or Qigong class, or today, you know, with the crystal bowls and toning and drumming and those kinds of things, try that kind of experience. All of these are transformative. Or just read someone like my books or some of the people that I recommend at the back of my books. I always put a reading list and refer to who, if I quote someone, I always tell the source. There are amazing people available to us today that we don't have to do anything alone. You do need to use your own filter, though. To, you know, if you're reading something and it makes you cringe, put it down. If you're seeing things on the internet and you just think, that doesn't ring true, either you're not ready for it or it doesn't ring true. So, yeah, be true to yourself. True to yourself.
I wanted to add something about the drumming when you mentioned that we really our bodies are vibrational, and the drumming affects the vibration, and so does the chanting that you talked about earlier. It's affecting the energy, the physical energy around you, and it does make a difference.
It does. It's a beautiful thing, and it's like, well, okay, native groups knew about this all along, but we're just catching on.
So what would you say is spiritual enlightenment? How does a person know they're becoming enlightened?
That space of inner peace is larger. The little things in life that might have triggered you or set you off before is less. That there is a sense of knowing where you know more truths, you know, I would call it a sense of knowing. It's very hard to describe. So if someone walks up to me and says, you know, Timmy fell in the well and Lassie's on his way, and I would know whether or not to panic, you know, whether or not to run. I would know if it's a critical situation. So that kind of knowing. And then
I
there's
have to
also
tell you that,
yeah,
Lynn, you just mentioned the word know, and I looked at my water bottle, which is sitting right on my desk, and it says, no, alkaline, better water. It just used that same word, no. So maybe this water is really good for me.
That's good. One of those moments. Yeah. So enlightenment, at first, I thought it was you search for it and bam, it hits you over the head and there you are. You're like Buddha. But instead, it turns out that it's very progressive, at least for 99% of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's very progressive. So when I sit in meditation now, there's a space behind my thoughts or under my thoughts that's just quiet. It's empty. It's open. And that is the enlightenment, part of the enlightenment process, or it is for me. And I know some others that describe it that way too. So it's very exciting that it's so attainable in this time period where it wasn't before, except for those few. So it things
well,
have
we changed. We were all taught that you needed the guru, and I've been
mm-hmm.
around a few gurus that hit you with a feather, you know, and that's when you're enlightened. When you get hit with the feather, you're enlightened.
Oh, that's
star.
Yeah, that's
you know,
cool.
That
yes.
was the message.
Wow. So I like that image.
It really, yeah, but it really is a progression.
Yeah. So now that it's past 2012, things are really changing so that enlightenment is an option for many, many more of us than ever before. A lot of New Agers call it an awakening or the awakening, that the whole planet is awakening. And there is something to all that. I kind of like things that are a little more historical.
Mm-hmm.
And the Native Americans in their traditions do have stories about where we're headed. But that's one way to learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a oneness that we're on the brink of. Internet has something to do with how we can see and connect with others that we never had the option of before. Well, through letters. I mean, you could write letters before. But how would I know someone in Russia to write to? But I had a woman from Russia in my class this week. And I had a person from Latvia in my class 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I'm going to take a class in Montana in June. And I'm going to speak at a conference in Switzerland in November.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the world is becoming much more connected. We're becoming more connected. It's our oneness process.
Okay, so tell us what happens in your workshops, your classes or workshops. What do you do?
Well, I teach many different things. I teach access bars. I teach theta healing, several classes of theta healing.
I think you need to explain how to... Just explain what each one of these is.
Okay.
Many people don't know.
Okay. Access bars, you can look up on the web, and you will see someone holding their hands at someone's head. There are 32 points on the head that we touch, and it releases all kinds of old stuff back 50,000 years regarding money, sex, the body, about controlling or creating. And it's amazing process because in an hour or so with these 32 points on a person's head, that they wake up and kind of float off afterwards. It's extremely peaceful. It's healing. And the client doesn't have to work. They rest. So that's a great thing. Theta healing is a healing modality that addresses physical, spiritual, mental, and emotional, and the practitioner uses the theta brainwave state to do so. So when a student studies this, they learn to go into the theta brainwave state, which is pretty powerful, life-changing stuff. It's very advanced meditation. From there, you can affect change on a whole new level. So that's what we empower people to do. That is what I use with my clients. Plus, I have a counseling license, a substance abuse counseling license. So I do use my counseling skills, too. I use theta healing. when I work one-on-one with people. I teach all of those, and then I created a new workshop based upon the book Unfolding the Mystery of Self. And if you happen to be able to come to Phoenix, I hold those four sessions, 2 hours each, and we discuss quotes from the book, so spiritual discussion, guided meditation, and really tiny homework assignments, mostly like to be aware, to practice. I am getting that together to go on the internet, so it'll be on my webpage soon. It's not ready. I think maybe 2 more weeks. And, of course, a lot of this is already accessible through my webpage. The books are accessible, that being versus doing chart that I talked about, and looking at your life that way, that's free. There are guided meditations that are free. So if a person goes to, it's lynncockrammurphy.com. They go there and get the newsletter, then they get all those freebies. And then you'll see the workshops that are coming up. They have to be on, you know, on the web. Otherwise, only the people that live in Phoenix, Arizona area, which is a few million people, but those are the only ones that can come. So, yeah, I'm putting it there.
Yeah, good. That's really, I'd love you to maybe finish by sharing what you believe to be the mystery of the self and the fact that we're never alone, what that means and how that can help people.
Okay. The mystery of self to me is discovering that I'm not my body. I am a light being within it that is using this body at this time for this experience and to be a teacher. The fact that we're never alone is that we're part of something much greater than ourselves. We're connected to every being, and we're connected to the Godhead, the totality of all that is. It's takes a little while to see that, to get there, but it is possible for every one of us. And in that is peace and unity and love, and life is much easier.
Mm. That's beautiful. So just tell us again how people can contact you, and then we'll finish.
Sure. Sure. My website, and let me spell it out for you because it's a long one. So it's Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Cockrum, C-O-C-K-R-U-M, hyphen, Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y.com. And there's a contact page there. If you contact me, I will get right back to you. And you can purchase the book through the website or through Amazon. And the previous book, you can also read a free chapter first if you would like to see if it's a fit for you. So lynncockrammurphy.com.
Oh, thank you. Lynn, your story is amazing, and your healing gifts, I know, are helping a lot of people.
Thank you.
It helps me just to hear it.
Yeah, life is really fun now. You know that you do your own healing work, and then, man, you have a lot to offer, and life gets easier. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would like to know how to have their life get easier. So please check out Lynn's book and her website. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you, Dr. Goodstone. I appreciate you, too.
And to those of you listening, I look forward to speaking to you again soon.